I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Smile, you son of a...
Well, I can't make love to a bush!
Flames. On the side of my face.
Hello and welcome to the Mighty Motion Picture Rangers. I'm Shane.
And I'm Josh.
And Josh, oh my God, Josh, we're getting breaking news right now. Our topic is journalism. Is this correct? Are you getting this on your end as well?
It's a hot scoop. It's coming out of the scoop machine. I'm getting it. It's feeding through.
Can you just imagine like an ice cream scoop machine, but it just spews out news?
It's just hateful rhetoric or whatever you want to print on it.
That's Twitter. Oh my God, that's Twitter. We just reinvented Twitter.
You cracked it.
We're talking journalism this week and in a very interesting topic, considering the times we're living in, I guess.
Yeah, very reflective of the times we're talking about.
If you're listening to this from a utopian future where we all love truth and fact, like, these were dark times, man.
You know what's funny? All the films we picked today are either made and set or set during like a similar time period, a stretch of like the 60s and 70s as well.
Actually, yeah, they are too, aren't
they? With certain administrations that are very reflective of now, which is kind of scary, but also weird.
Did we just make it even more themed than usual?
Double themed. Themed times two.
Well, what film have you brought this week, speaking of journalism?
I brought the 2007... crime drama journalism film Zodiac, directed by David Fincher, which
starring Robert Downey Jr. Mark Ruffalo,
Jake Gyllenhaal. Yeah,
so good.
All our faves, all our white boy faves.
And who's like the one female actor as per any David Fincher movie?
Oh God,
who was it? It was
I'm honestly blanking. This is the one I watched. It's the furthest much away.
It is. I'm just googling this now. Vamping. It is Chloe Sevigny.
Yeah, this is journalism in process, folks. It is research, which a lot of journalists don't do nowadays. We're getting hot.
Oh, Brian Cox is in it too, as well.
Yes,
and John Carroll Lynch, Richmond Arquette.
Yeah, if I were to summarize this film, it's very much a proto version of Mindhunter, what he does later with Netflix as well.
Yeah. It was very interesting watching this and being like, oh, this is where he's doing Mindhunter from. Like,
yeah,
this is
it's very much
from.
Like the palette, like the coverage, sort of the scope, the way he like films. Like, it's very much like little vignettes of things happening and crimes, and then it cuts to people researching and reacting. It's a very interesting put together film, and it's like the real sort of case. It sort of leaves you like open-ended.
Yeah,
very much open-ended.
And it's interesting for a serial killer movie to not have the cops be the leads. I mean, Mark Ruffalo's in it and he's the cop, but actually I found this really fascinating because I'm watching the movie and I'm like, oh, okay, so the leads are, we've kind of got Ruffalo and we've got Downey Jr. and then they're kind of discarded at the end for Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh,
because what it's based on is the book by the guy who Jake Gyllenhaal was playing.
Yeah. And it's this weird, almost psycho-esque switcheroo of protagonists. I found that very interesting. It's a very long movie, but I did not feel the running time at all.
Right.
It's like 2 hours and 50-something minutes long. It's nearly 3 hours long. It came out the same year as, I think, The Green Mile, which also had the same kind of running time. It was this like year of all these Oscar bait movies being like nearly 3 hours long. but it was really fascinating, and it was a very odd movie because I found like it's this huge running time, but it kind of moves really, really fast, and it's got the soundtrack cues like what he would use later in Mindhunter.
Yeah.
But it moves really, really fast. There's a lot of information, a lot of intercutting, so the running time's kind of never a thing, and then it just kind of stops. And it leaves you horrifically unfulfilled, which is entirely the point of it, because the Zodiac Killer was never found. And I was like, oh, this is him doing that, but in movie form, you clever son of a fucking bitch. It was a really fascinating version of a journalism story, and it's interesting to compare it directly to one of our other picks. For both of us, we've got The Older President's Man.
Yeah,
and they're very similar in terms of space and characters that they're dealing
and
with.
And it's very choiceful. Like, there's a lot of choices in how they sort of covered the real events and what they left out and where they ended at the points in the movie.
Speaking of the real events, one of the murders, the Daylight murder in there, is horrific.
Yeah,
horrific.
And they're drawn out too. Like, even like the very first murder at like the Lover's Lane, that Daylight murder, like even like how he covered like the taxi cab driver being killed. It's like very like drawn out. You get like, you're immediately within the scene of it, and you're just like, what?
I tell you, the one scene that just had me on edge was when he goes down to the basement of the film projectionist. I was like, no, it's bad. And it's like, it's the most innocuous conversation about cinema, about like old Hollywood films, and what is it, not the I Am Legend adaptation, it's a different one. Not Thunderbolt, it's you know the one, and then the Zodiac Killer references the film in it, and I was so tense, and I was like, is he the killer? But then it was a very good scene in like a movie filled with very, very good scenes.
It's the scene that's like most commonly on Twitter. People like share it all.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought it was the Daylight killing, because that one I'd seen like a half a dozen times in references.
I see that scene a lot, where it's just like sort of just focused on Jake Gyllenhaal being like really scared.
Yeah. Speaking of the actors, really great cast. It's Jake Gyllenhaal. Jake Gyllenhaal's played a fair few journalists now, and they're all like wildly different. Because I'm pretty sure, isn't the character from Okja also a journalist?
There's journalists in it. I think he's like a animal rights. No, he's like a TV journalist. Like he's like a name.
But personality in news, if you would call it that. Mm. There's him, and then he's a journalist in Nightcrawler, of an entirely
video
different
journalist
kind.
Yeah.
And then there's Downey Jr. in
pre-Iron Man
too, but had he done Kiss Kiss Bang Bang at this point?
Yes, or I think that was 2005 or 2006.
Right,
on top of each other.
Yeah. The Most Dangerous Game is the name of the movie, which is the hunting men instead of animals is like the thrill of the, you know, it's the. And Mark Ruffalo being good old reliable Mark Ruffalo, but. I liked it. It was interesting because when I first finished it, I was like, I don't quite know how I feel. I know what I watched is good, but I don't know how I feel, which I haven't had that often lately. I don't get movies that kind of stump me. Yeah. So I definitely, like, at the end of watching it, I was like, I have to watch this again. I absolutely have to watch this again because I have no idea exactly. Like, now I know, now it's sort of having a bit of breathing space. I'm like, you know, it's definitely good. It's definitely intricate in ways that I probably need several more viewings to sort of pull apart and figure out and realize. Interestingly, because Fincher's known for doing like a couple hundred takes for a scene or whatever, and Robert Downey Jr. was not used to this, and so in protest he peed in cups and left them around the set because he wasn't allowed to leave for a toilet break. Was so used to it. It's like, oh, they're changing the mag, I'll go pee, and they were like, nope, we keep rolling, keep going. And so he's like, because they've shot on a Phantom something, or not the Phantom, this sort of new tech that was really good in low light. It was the first sort of really great low light digital cameras.
Yeah.
There's an extensive digital work. I don't know if you've seen the video where they break down.
I was going to say, like, this is more of Fincher pioneering.
There was a couple of them that some of the driving scenes looked really odd to me because they'd clearly shot them on green screen and then replaced it. And it was really good, but it was very, it stood out as feeling a bit artificial in some ways. I don't quite know why, but he's definitely perfected it come Mindhunter. I just think it's a matter of he was like a couple of steps ahead of the tech at the time.
Yeah.
But really excellent movie, really long. It's on Prime at the moment in Australia. I don't know if it'll still be there when this comes out.
And everything, you watch the director's cut?
Yes, I watched the director's cut.
I've seen.
Well, I bought it on Blu-ray ages ago. I bought it along with Heat a few weeks ago. And I was like, yes, I'm going to watch these. And then I never got around to it because I wanted to sit and do it in one sitting. And I was able to do that with both, thankfully. But I watched the director's cut and it was really fascinating. I want to watch it with his commentary actually as well. I reckon that would be
amazing.
He's got great commentaries, very funny commentaries. So the film that I brought in terms of journalism, is the very underseen, not really, it's like a considered a modern classic, 1976's Network, directed by Sidney Lumet, starring Peter Finch, Faye Dunaway, and...
Robert Duvall.
William Holden and Robert Duvall. And then various little supporting characters, Ned Beatty and all that kind of thing.
And just to top it off here, it is streaming on Stan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely streaming on Stan. And written by Paddy Chayefsky, considered one of the great writers of all time. And it's sort of like the anti-Newsroom, this movie. But this one's considered a classic. I hadn't seen it. I saw it in film school. It was one of those ones that kept popping up in reference to script-based things. And so I was like, oh, okay, because everyone considered this to be one of the best screenplays ever written. And I would probably agree.
Yeah.
It's really perfect.
It floors you.
Yeah. And so, and I watched it then and I was like, holy shit. And then every time I come across, it's weird because I come across a lot of my filmmaker peers and people who are usually well-read on a lot of movies, like Alex, our friend Alex, never seen it before. And then he watched it and he's like a huge into the 70s movies, like he knows that world better than I do. And yet he hadn't seen Network and he puts on Network and he's like, holy shit. And he loved it so much. He watched it again that same day with his mum who hadn't seen it. It's so good. And it's become more relevant now, which is,
It's frighteningly relevant.
Yeah. Especially to news media. Faye Dunaway's character is so on point with literally everyone. We should tell people what it's about. Yeah.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, it covers a network where one of the on-air newscasters goes insane and then the ratings spike. And so they decide to cash in on it and go with it and let this insane man go on his ramblings. Yeah. And it starts to sort of upend the way they do the news. The news becomes entertainment.
Very commercialized.
They have this big stage with the psychic. It's almost like a game show. They gamify the news. And the thing is, Paddy Chayefsky kind of did this before we were actually really doing that in real life. It was still the 70s and all that, you know, All the President's Men.
Still integrity.
Same year as Network. Yeah, yeah. So that was, like, there was still a tremendous amount of integrity, albeit probably very, you know, white dominant and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
But there's still quite a bit of integrity. So it was almost like this weird fairy tale thing, you know, with this rather shocking ending. And now you watch that ending in these days and you're like, oh yeah, no, I see that. No. I see that totally happening.
That's just like what we see now in Australian television, if you watch that.
Yeah. And speaking of Australians, fucking Peter Finch in this, the guy who goes mad, he's Australian. And apparently Sidney Lumet was very worried that his accent would come through, so he like pretended to be American to get the role and all this kind of stuff. But he's got this iconic monologue that sort of gets gift everywhere, and it's like, I'm mad as hell and I'm not gonna take this anymore, and he gets everyone to yell it out of the windows. And that's sort of considered one of the greatest, you know, lines. That's one of the, it's the you can't handle the truth of the 1970s. Faye Dunaway is phenomenal. It famously got nominated like across the board. Like every actor in this got a nomination. Two leads got a nomination. William Holden and Peter Finch were both nominated, and Peter Finch won posthumously. He died before the Oscars ceremony, which is really sad. And he's one of only like two acting awards to be given posthumously. So him and Heath Ledger, both Australian, which is really kind of cool. And it's Sidney Lumet, who, 12 Angry Men, Dog Day Afternoon, Murder on the Orient Express. It's weird because I hadn't seen a lot of Sidney Lumet other than this. And then recently I've started watching some things, the Anderson tapes, Deadly Affair.
Some of my favorite stuff, really, are 12 Angry Men, Anderson tapes. It's like, oh my God.
Starting to think that we owe more to him than critically we think. You know, we talk a lot about Hitchcock. Everyone owes this to Hitchcock, and Hitchcock you can trace to Spielberg and to Bong Joon-ho and all that kind of thing. But Sidney Lumet doesn't get talked about enough, but he's really there. And actually, if anyone's listening who is a film student, I highly recommend his book, Making Movies by Sidney Lumet, because in it he kind of breaks it down in a really non-wanky way about how he went and directed those movies. He talks about his process for 12 Angry Men, where he says, okay, I designed my shots to go to start wide and high, and as the further the story goes in, we go low and close, this kind of thing. He talks about budget. He talks about his rehearsal process. He talks about all sorts of things across his entire filmography. It's really wonderful. Highly recommend. It's better than the David Mamet book, which I despise the David Mamet book. I think I'm the only one who does. Everyone rates it very highly, and I found it very, because he's like, you shouldn't move the camera. The camera should
Shut up.
The camera should bring no attention to self. You're not making camera, you're making a story about
here
characters.
At the Mighty Motion Picture Rangers, we like moving the camera.
Yes, yes. And seeing them, what's interesting is he doesn't do like a lot of these huge showy moves, but he's the choreography of the camera and the blocking in this film is like tight as fuck. This is some of the best work I've sort of seen, just as far as like it feels masterfully done. And it also looks effortless, but you know, like, it's if it looks effortless, even, it was not.
Because there's, like, rooms full of people. Like, it gets, like, big at some points. Like 7 or 8 people in a room.
And it's not just covered. Masters. There's bits of coverage. There's a lot of blocking camera. It's just superb. I consider this, like, one of... As far as, like, American films go specifically, this is probably one of, if not the best. Mm. Along with... Our final pick, which neither of us had seen, but everyone tells you to watch this movie.
It's on the radar, yeah.
You know, it's one of the best picture nominees. It's always talked about, always referenced in everything. It's All the President's Men. Also from 1976, directed by, oh God, what's his name? He did Clute as well. It is Vamp, know, Josh.
Sorry?
I was saying Vamp. Make some stuff up while I... there we go.
The thing is, I know the name. I just can't... I don't want to pronounce
it. It's Alan J. Pakula.
That's it.
This tells the story of the Washington Post reporters Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, who uncover the details of the Watergate scandal that leads to President Richard Nixon's resignation, starring Dustin Hoffman, Robert Redford... and Jason Robards in a tiny role, and then various little supporting players.
Yeah.
Written by William Goldman, who is famous for The Princess Bride.
Yes.
And this is also a phenomenal piece of American filmmaking.
God,
it's so good. I was expecting something good. I wasn't expecting something that would just rivet me in a very modern way.
Yeah, it is so modern. I feel like it wasn't
just from the opening of the massive close up on the typewriter going
and because they use like gun effects and cannon bombs and
cannonballs and split diopters. This is the most use of split diopters I think I've ever seen in my life in one movie.
And it's split diopters in like with like push-ins as well.
Yeah,
and
they're
letting the scene.
I was
breathe.
Trying to figure out how there's this one shot. It's like the second last shot. While they're working, and there's the TV there,
yep.
and it starts as a wide, and everything's in focus, and then as they zoom in,
it
becomes a split diopter, and I'm like, I'm just trying to wrap my head around what the actual mechanical process of that was. Did they slide a diopter in? Was it already there? I could not figure it out. All my technical
wasn't
knowledge.
Any like the thing is, there wasn't any like distortion that was suggested slid in. I feel like,
it was there. The bar was there.
Yeah, I feel like it was. Because it was at the same depth initially, and as it zoomed in, it becomes more apparent.
Yeah, but I don't even know how they pulled that off, that shot. I love, you know, the final... You know, I always complain about, like, true story movies having really dumb end titles where it's just, like, this block of text that says, such and such did this, and in 1978, this person died of carcinomas, and then this happened, and a grave still stands there to this day, and we call it... Mother's Day, like just all these really dumb titles on otherwise really great movies. Bridge of Spies, I think, does this, and I really didn't like. I just thought they should have just ended on the shot. I didn't need to know what happened afterwards. But it's this like staple of true story. Let's win an Oscar movies, and they do a version of it in All the President's Men. But it's really thrilling. It's this like auto.
It's all visual.
It's all visual. It's this news typing Audi, like the version of breaking news, like you would get a computer alert now, but it's the old version, so it's sort of like sent in and the typewriter automatically types it out, and like, my God, it was riveting, and I was just like, fuck, this movie is so good. It's so modern. Does not feel like 2 hours and 15 minutes. So tense. Some of those scenes in the car park with Deep Throat.
Oh, my God. That was to die for.
And like, just the way it was lit.
Yeah, this is the big thing I wanted to bring up that we didn't forget was like, they let the actors fucking fall into darkness and not give a shit about it because their performance.
Some of those driving scenes were phenomenal. And I was like, oh, they have them lit at some points, but then they just let them sit in darkness. It's not like this impossibly lit car that doesn't look real, which I fucking hate in movies.
Yeah, it's like, just let it breathe, let them sit and go into darkness, let it come out of it. Because that's what this type of story is. It's on the ground. They're just running their journalists.
But then I think it was really clever because then it contrasted with the bullpen in the newsroom where it's this just bright lights, fluoro lights. And one of the moments that got me, I literally said, holy shit, out loud when it happened because there's, it's Robert Redford's running across the newsroom floor.
Yeah.
And it's this dolly shot, this lateral dolly shot that just fucking... Because he's pelting. Like, this isn't sort of running, movie running. This is like, he's just pelting and the camera's moving as fast as him. And then it goes out the hallway, up to the door of an elevator. And I just cried out, holy shit, because that shot went so much more than I thought it would.
Yeah, and then it just goes and it frames them in the elevator.
It frames them perfectly. It stopped perfectly. I was like, in my head, I was like, how many fucking takes was that? Yeah. That must have been the whole day for that one shot, surely.
Yeah. Because that was on the Ariflex as well. So a bit noisy, a bit like...
Yeah, clunky. And it was... But it was like those dolly shots, those just the length of the newsroom floor. Apparently, they were going to shoot in the real place and then they couldn't. So they built that as a set, which...
Because the journalists, the real journalists were in the background and they were trying to act too much.
Yeah, they were trying to act too much. Yeah. So they got fake actors to do it. But, like, it looks... Even the prod design, because it's not a flashy production design like Crimson Peak or something, which I adore, but there's still so much work to it. Apparently, it was so detailed that they put, like, real...
Out of date
phone books in that were period accurate to the year that it was being made. And I'm just like, that is nuts. But it worked and it's brilliant. And it's one... I'm kind of a bit... What won in Best Picture that year? Because I was like... Surely there wasn't a better film this year than All the Presidents.
And carrying on with that, with the massively white newsroom as well, there was a great color contrast in terms of like just the background and some of the key figures and bloody Robert Redford's tan suit.
Yeah. Oh, that was a tan suit. it was just so good. And Robert Redford was doing some really good work in there. I kind of seen... Have you seen... Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid?
I missed that one.
Oh my god, it's so good. It's a very different role for him. Speaking of, you know, Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman, it's very understated for Dustin Hoffman's usually the one yelling. Rocky won Best Picture. Yeah, no, All the President's Men is way better than Rocky. Yeah, this is probably going to be a hot take. Everyone loves Rocky. I have tried Rocky twice and I could not get it. It's just the most brotastic celebration of punching people that I've ever seen. And I'm probably going to get fried for saying that, but I really don't like that. Not a fan of Sylvester Stallone. It's not my kind of thing. Whereas All the President's Men has stayed relevant as opposed to Rocky. The performance is fantastic. Like, everything about this movie was just perfect. And I was like, I'm mad I hadn't seen it earlier.
Same.
But then I'm also kind of happy I saw it in the middle of this current time we're living in. It just maybe it gives me a little bit of hope, even if that hope is unfounded.
And I suggested this would pair exquisitely with Secret Honor.
I saw you tweet that. I'm like, that would... Secret Honor and All the President's Men would make a perfect double. Which order would you do it in first? Would you do All the Presidents and then Secret Honor, or Secret Honor and then All the Presidents?
I think All the Presidents, because it's sort of follows the tradition.
So All the Presidents first or second?
First. Because it's the where it goes. Like, it's linear.
Yeah. But then you've made it like a downer ending. Like, it starts good and then ends down.
And it goes deeper and deeper and deeper.
But they would make a terrific double feature. That's our picks this week. If you have any interesting journalism movies, let us know. It's an interesting genre. We had a couple of picks because there's a movie called Christine that you'd almost suggested, but then you switched to Zodiac because I hadn't seen it yet. And you had, whereas neither of us have seen Christine. There's some really interesting movies. So if you have some interesting picks, let us know. You can contact us on Twitter or Instagram at Picture Rangers. You can email us at motionpicturerangers@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter at ShaneM_Anderson.
And me on Twitter at Joshua_Grigg_.
And our next topic for next week, all things going according to plan, will be war movies. And we're going to have a special guest. Hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Otherwise, maybe expect more commentaries from us.
We may do a commentary. We'll interrupt the usual programming with some other programming, depending on how things go.
Yes.
But our next one of this format should hopefully be war movies.
Yes.
So thanks again so much for listening, guys. Listen to us and other great podcasts on That's Not Canon Productions. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you again next time. Bye.
Hi, Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.